All right. Well, I got in trouble last week when I came up with the title of this lesson. But it's not just for fun. This statement in Genesis does have a very significant impact on the story. Because this morning's lesson is about a family. A very important family, and also a very dysfunctional family. If I had to pick a different title for this lesson, and I think for a little bit Rachel was tempted to say I had to pick a different title for this lesson, I would go with So Much More Than a Coat. See, this is a story about Jacob's family. Jacob was given the name Israel in the readings this week, so that anybody who would come to be called an Israelite is a part of this family. But that's down the road stuff. This morning we're talking about the beginning of this family, the origin story, the first generation of Israel's family. Now, when we get to next week's reading, we get into the Joseph narrative. And we get into Joseph and his jealous brothers. You will be tempted to remember your old Sunday school lessons and say, ah, the story of the boy with the coat of many colors that made his brothers so jealous. Some of you may have studied a little deeper, or at least saw the musical about Joseph, and say, of course it wasn't just the coat. It was those dreams. Right? Those brothers wouldn't put up with their little brother saying they would bow down to them. And that was the real problem. Right? Well, this morning I want to show that while neither the coat nor the dreams helped the situation at all, if you really want to get back to the real problem between Joseph and his brothers, you have to go back to this week's readings. I was actually a little all over the map on which week to do this lesson because it's such a big narrative. I said, well, let's do it as a lead-in. Because if you're going to understand what is happening between Joseph and his brothers, you need to pay attention to this stuff. Leah had dim eyes, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Jacob was in love with Rachel. These words hang over everything in the story. Everything that happens in this family, this first generation of this family, has this statement hanging over it. Everything that follows is impacted by these words. Jacob loved Rachel. He did not love Leah. And that's where the problem comes in. And the problems were not all of Jacob's doing. He wanted to marry Rachel. He never wanted to marry Leah. That was not in his plan. That was his father-in-law's doing, right? Laban tricked him into marrying both girls so he could get an extra 7 years of work out of Jacob. You can see what Jacob wanted all along. In the first 7 years, it said it seemed like only a few days to him because he was so in love with Rachel. The next seven, it didn't say that. It didn't say it went by like a few days. Here's how it sums it up this time. He loved Rachel more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. So if you recall, he makes the arrangement to work 7 years for Rachel. They have the wedding ceremony and go into the tent. And the next morning he realizes it's Leah. And he goes to argue with Laban, so that's not what we agreed. And Laban says, I can't marry off the younger, the older. He said, make you a deal, finish your week with Leah, and then we'll have another wedding. You'll marry Rachel, and then you'll work for 7 more years. So 7 years looking forward to marrying the woman he loved, like a few days. The next one's having both wives. It doesn't say the opposite, but it doesn't say that. It seemed to be different. It wasn't a secret to anybody. Leah had dim eyes. We don't know exactly what this means, if it meant actually didn't see well, or if some idea of not having fire or life or spark behind her eyes or something like that. Or I've frequently made the bad pun that just means she's not a looker. Nobody ever laughs, so don't feel bad that you didn't either. Many semesters of college students have sat silently through that same bad pun. Well, Leah had dim eyes. Rachel, beautiful of form and face. Jacob was in love with Rachel. Everybody knew. And what follows after these weddings is the birth of the children of Israel, the first 11 sons. But if you look at this scene at the end of chapter 29 and through chapter 30, it's portrayed as a struggle. It's not seen through the eyes of Jacob. If it was told from Jacob's perspective, it might have been, and then there was another son, and then there was another son, and look at this family growing. But that's not the perspective that we have. The arrival of these children is told through the eyes of these two sisters, Leah and Rachel. Leah is the first one to give birth. And it says there's a reason for that. Right after this statement of he loved Rachel more than Leah, and so he worked, in verse 31 of chapter 29, it says, when the Lord saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, that Rachel was barren. As these children are born, and they're given names, we've seen that in Genesis, names mean an awful lot. Right? A name says a lot about somebody. I want you to notice the perspective of Leah as she's naming these children. I want you to notice that while we don't have a lot of narrative other than these children being born for this span of time, which is probably just less than 20 years, we can get a picture of what's going on in these relationships. And we can see this story of Jacob loved Rachel. He did not love Leah. So first, Leah has a son named Reuben. It says, the Lord has seen my misery. Surely my husband will love me now. And then Simeon, the Lord heard that I am not loved. He gave me this one too. And she has Levi. Now at last my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him 3 sons. And then she has Judah. She says, this time I will praise the Lord. What a sad progression that we see over these years at the beginning of this family. From Leah's perspective, these names, From all the reading this week, these names stood out to be the most. And these statements about them, it's a heartbreaking story of this progression of, he'll love me now. God sees that I'm not loved. Surely now there'll be a bond. And then kind of the desperation of, well, this time I'm just going to praise God. Perhaps the loss of hope. After these four were born, the next four children were born of the sisters' handmaidens. Rachel couldn't stand that she didn't have any children, so she tells Jacob, take my handmaiden, and she has two children. And Leah does the same thing, and they have two. And then Leah has two more. I'm going to skip ahead to those for now. So we still see this desire. It says Issachar, so this would be the ninth son. It says, God has rewarded me for giving my servant to my husband. And then her last son, Zebulun, God has presented me with a precious gift. This time my husband will treat me with honor because I have borne six sons. As we're reading, we look and say, it's not likely, right? Because we still have this statement hanging over. Jacob loves Rachel, not Leah. Leah does have a daughter, it mentions, Dinah. We don't have a description of her. But we will get back to Dinah. And as this is going on, and we have Leah trying to do whatever she can to earn her husband's love, to looking to God to try to fill this hole in her life. We see a few reactions from Rachel when her handmaiden had her second child. So to make sure we're all caught up at this point, Leah has had four children. Rachel has claimed two children. Rachel's statement was, and given the name, I have had a great struggle with my sister and I have won. You really see the balance in this family. Even the names of these children are a reminder of the pecking order in this family. We have children desperate to be to belong, desperate to be accepted, and anything associated with Rachel, well, this is a victory. That has to weigh on a family. Has to weigh on the minds of these sons. They know the score. They know the pecking order. They understand where their names came from. They look and they see that these sons of Leah, they know that if their father had had his way, they wouldn't exist. When Rachel finally has a son, names him Joseph, which means give me another son. From there, Jacob acts a little differently. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, send me on my way so I can go back to my homeland. You kind of get the feeling that this is a guy who says, now I have what I wanted. I can move forward. I kind of think of I don't know if you've ever had a conversation, a couple that's been married for a while, and then they have a child and they say, now we have a family. You say, you had a family all along. You were a family. Except in this case, you get the picture of the Jacob saying, now I have a family. You say, you have 11 children already. He says, well, now I really can move on. Because in his mind, what matters just Rachel, and now Joseph. Now we can move on. And as the story goes on, we don't see a lot of narratives about the children for a few chapters, but we come to probably the lowest point for this family, what I think is the real breaking point for the children of Leah, and it really leads us up to the Joseph story. Chapter 34. It's actually the first part of our reading for next week, but I wanted to bring it in. Like I said, I had a hard time figuring out where to put all this. Sorry, I feel like I'm slipped into storytelling mode. I hope this is okay. Hope this is of interest. It mentioned back in chapter 30 the name of one daughter, Dinah. In chapter 34, we have a narrative about her. Now Dinah, the daughter Leah had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. When Shechem, son of Hamor, the Hivite, ruler of that area, saw her, he took her and raped her. His heart was drawn to Dinah, daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her. And Shechem said to his father, Hamor, get me this girl as my wife. A lot wrong with these verses, right? The situation is Dinah goes out, she is attacked, raped, kidnapped, and now her attacker says, I love her and want to marry her. And from what we see later in the narrative, she is still with Shechem this whole time. She is not allowed to leave until these negotiations are done. And you can only imagine how a father would feel about this. What do you think Jacob's response is? When he heard that his daughter Dinah had been defiled, his sons were in the fields with his livestock, so he did nothing about it until they came home. Then Shechem's father Hamor went out to talk with Jacob. Jacob's response? Well, let's listen to some terms. Jacob, in response to this thing happening to his daughter, was, well, let's see if I can get something out of this. And he goes to negotiate the marriage. Makes sense with what we've seen all along. This isn't one of Rachel's kids. This is one of Leah's. Maybe she's finally worth something. This did not sit well with Dinah's brothers. Two of them in particular, Simeon and Levi, Leah's sons, took matters into their own hands when they saw that their father was not going to. At these negotiations, they told Shechem, says, we don't have a problem with the wedding, except there's this thing about our family. All the men are circumcised, and we can't possibly allow this marriage to happen unless all of your men are circumcised as well. And so they go through the process, and it says all the Shechemites were circumcised. It says, while they were still recovering from that, Simeon and Levi went in and killed them all. Don't mess with their sister, apparently. Jacob's reaction. Sorry. Forgot which slides I have there. Jacob's reaction to Simeon and Levi, boy, you sure have messed up business dealings for me. You have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed. And they reply, should he have treated our sister like a prostitute? And this is basically the last narrative that we have of this family before the Joseph scene. We have this struggle between a father and the sons that he was never interested in having in the first place, over his treatment of their sister. It has been made so clear that he is not interested in this portion of his family, and it is so obvious to everybody that there is this strain. He said, you should be protecting your daughter. You're trying to make some money off of her situation, her tragedy. So when we come to the Joseph story, and these brothers have their little brother Joseph in the fields with them, and one of the first, it appears that one of the first times he's out there, he comes back and tattles on them. And then he comes back out and he's wearing this coat, showing just how much more loved he is than them. But they already knew that. And he tells them, oh, I've had these dreams that you're going to bow down to me. They're probably feeling like, well, seems like we're already supposed to. All of these things in this family background finally break in that scene. And it's not about the coat. It goes all the way back to this statement. Leah had dim eyes. Rachel was beautiful in form and face. And Jacob loved Rachel. Maybe I'm being hard on Jacob. I don't think so. But maybe given his role as patriarch, I shouldn't speak so poorly of him. But boy, I have a hard time seeing the way he does things. So, done a lot of storytelling this morning. So what? We can all agree, yes, messed up family. Yep, he should have done something different. So what now? Well, I don't think the lesson is, make sure you're loving all 13 of your children and not neglecting your other three spouses. That's probably a little too specific to the crowd. It's probably not, it probably shouldn't be, beautiful women named Rachel are more trouble than they're worth. I'm not saying that. But I do think we can take something from this family narrative. Something we can see in the way that these people are treated and the way they respond. God has given every one of us incredible abilities to fill people up, to add to them by showing them that they have value, to show each other, you are important. Remember all that stuff from the Psalm last week. We are able to say, you were created by the one true God. You are not a mistake. Every one of us is better because you have been in our lives. We have that ability to give that gift to people, add to their lives, fill them up. Or we have the ability to deny them of that, to squash it, to steal that light from the people around us, to make sure that they know they're just supporting characters in my story. And we say, either do something for me to justify your worth or get out. I've got more important things to worry about. We may not say those words, but do we ever act that way? Jacob was called to be a part of God's plan to show love to the whole world. He was part of that, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob right? All the world will be blessed through you. He couldn't even love his own family. He was too interested in winning. He won against his brother. He won against Laban. Rachel won against Leah. In making his own plans work out. That's what Jacob was interested in. He was interested in his plans. God's plan succeeded, but I don't think it was because of Jacob. I think God's plan succeeded in spite of Jacob. And we are called to participate in that same plan. And that plan is going to work. God is going to reach people. Will it work because of you or in spite of you? To the people in your life, family, friends, neighbors, co-workers, waiters, cashiers, customer service representatives, people on the sidewalk, the guy who won't get off his phone while he's ordering his soy decaf hazelnut latte and the line is already moving slowly enough as it is, are you showing them the value that they have within them? Or are you showing them just that they're in your way? There is enough ugliness and dismissiveness in this world already. You've got the wrong letter at the end of your name, well, obviously you're not worth listening to. Right? We have all kinds of reasons to dismiss people. We need to be part of the solution. And maybe that's what we can learn from this family. That's what I've got this morning. If there's anything you need this morning, please come forward and let us know. If there's anything we can do, this is family time. Please come share with us as we stand and sing.
Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling.